which we measure our pain. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Stephen Pizzo, who is an investigative journalist and author of the New York Times bestseller Inside Job, The Looting of America's Savings and Loan, which was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. He has an article at The Smirking Chimp, Cultist, Crazy, or Both. Welcome to Background Briefing, Stephen Pizzo.
Hi, Ian.
And Rupert Murdoch has brought Scientology back into the news by suggesting that it's a cult and it's I think he said it's evil. He also went on to say that Tom Cruise, who's now divorcing his actress, third actress wife, she's divorcing him, I should say, is number two or three in the hierarchy of the Church of Scientology, which of course is a church. It has a 501c3 tax exemption. But my understanding is that what perhaps prompted Murdoch to go public with this is that his son James, the heir to the News Corp, who's been seen at these inquiries in London into their outrageous activities of phone tapping, etc., that he was had troubles with drugs and alcohol, and they had to do an intervention. They had to literally kidnap him from Scientologists who had recruited him, and you know, they do apparently target troubled heirs so that they can milk their fortunes. Is that your understanding?
Well, yeah, I have no inside information about about that particular case, though it certainly fits the pattern of most religious organizations all through time that that tend to target wealthy people. Not that they're ever shy about shaking down the poor as well. But I think all of this is that there's a much larger question about this. I have no particular bones to pick with Scientology or Mormonism or the Catholic Church. They're all religions. And in this country, we've got the First Amendment. Now, I think people have forgotten what the Bill of Rights is. It is a Bill of Rights, but each one of those rights is a contract. The First Amendment is a contract, and it simply says, look, in return for religions not interfering in the affairs of the secular government, we are going to step back and say we are going to leave you alone to do whatever you would like within your religion. Believe whatever you want, have whatever beliefs you want that are lawful, and we'll leave you alone. Now, that's a two-sided, that's a contract, and when one side breaks that contract or infringes on the rights of the other person in that contract, they are putting the entire contract at risk. And with the religious right, when I say the religious right, maybe that's too narrow. Religions in general have increasingly infringed on that right. That they have increasingly violated step by step, whether you're talking about the Roe v. Wade decision, where they're state by state now are going in and passing laws restricting access to women's health care. These people are taking their religious beliefs and injecting them into the secular sphere, and that violates that contract. And so it's time for those of us on the other side who have been quite patient with these people over time. In fact, when the religious right didn't want a mosque built in New York near Ground Zero, it was the secularists, people like me who are not religious people, who came up and said, wait a minute, excuse me, those people have the same right as you have as Christians to build a church. So, you know, secularists have been patient to a fault with the religious right, and it is time now for us to step up and say, listen, the public square, which you keep complaining is excluding religion, is not a lecture hall. The public square is a debating society. You walk in there, you better be ready to support your belief structure with facts, or don't get up, don't become offended and start screaming religious persecution as soon as we say, excuse me, the spirit world isn't real. It doesn't have any effect on what we do. We don't need it to be moral people. I'm an atheist, and I am entirely moral as far as most Christians would consider it. So, you know, that's the issue here, whether it's Scientology or the LDS Church, which gives me great concern to see anybody in that particular organization, which, by the way, if you study it and you study Scientology, it's clear to me that L. Ron Hubbard did some serious reading of the Book of Mormon when he decided to concoct his religion.
Well, again, I'm speaking with Stephen Pizzo, who's an investigative journalist and author of the New York Times bestseller Inside Job, The Looting of America's Savings and Loan, which was nominated for the Pulitzer Prize. He has an article at The Smirking Chimp, Cultist, Crazy, or Both. The point, just to add to your point, though, Stephen, which is well taken, the point is that we, the taxpayers, give the Catholic Church tax-free exemption. We give the Church of Scientology, who actually forced their way into getting that tax exemption by harassing IRS auditors, and then eventually Miscavige, the head of the church, who's supposedly very close to Tom Cruise. He showed up at the IRS commissioner's office without anything on the books, just showed up there one day, and they made a deal because the Scientologists were just harassing the IRS to the point where they didn't want to even look into them anymore because they're very proactive in terms of their both in terms of litigation and in what they call an ethics squad, a kind of paramilitary type of operation they have. So we can get into the comparisons between the Mormon Church and Scientology, which, you know, arguably the Mormon Church was a 19th century version of what Scientology is today. But they all have this tax exemption. And the Catholic bishops almost scuttled Obamacare before it even got before the Supreme Court. So I think this is a discussion. You know, it's so odd to me that the two things that are in this country that I considered off the table in terms of a dinner party conversation are politics and religion. And so it doesn't leave much to be discussed.
Well, I suggest strongly that we put religion back on the table. I mean, the religious folk are not shy about, and they're becoming increasingly brazen about pushing their personal agenda. They talk about the gay agenda all the time. My word, the gay agenda, if there is one, pales by comparison to the religious rights agenda. And they are pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. As for the taxes, and so we need to start pushing back. I mean, say, sooner or later, like with any bully, they will continue to push until somebody pushes back. And it's really time for people to get over being afraid of being called a religious bigot and simply say, excuse me, I don't share your beliefs. I think your beliefs are nonsensical. They don't belong in the secular arena. If you want to believe and pretend friends, please go right ahead and do that at home, but we don't need them enshrined in public policy. As for the tax issue, well, you know, they're always talking about the right is always talking about taxes being shifted to the wealthy and how that's just terrible. The tax exemption that religious organizations get, I have read, I've independently verified this, but I imagine it could be with a fairly simple Google search, that it's $70 billion a year. It's costing the U.S. Treasury $70 billion a year, this tax exemption that churches get. That, in effect, then raises my taxes. I have to make up that difference, and I don't share those beliefs. So there's an argument that they better watch it. There was just this evangelical minister just yesterday, his name escapes me right now, but televangelist, and he actually suggested on his show that the government pass a law taxing people who don't attend church.
Well, you know, Rush Limbaugh's brother has written a book which became a bestseller, I imagine, in Christian bookstores, where he made the argument that religion in this country was under attack from kind of the secular, what's the word that they use? Secular humanists.
Yes, the terrible secular humanists. And this whole, you know, religion thrives on persecution. thrives on it. This is something that they love to keep bringing up, that they're being persecuted. Anybody who objects to their agenda is a persecutor. So, you know, you can't win. So stop trying to win with them. If they push, you push back. It's as simple as that.
Again, I'm speaking with Stephen Pizos, an investigative journalist and author of the New York Times bestseller Inside Job, The Looting of America's Savings and Loans, which was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. He has an article at The Smirking Chimp, Coldest, Crazy, or Both. Now, the reason that this is important, I think, to have this discussion, and I wish the press would get away from their PC objection to talking about religion, and if, you know, obviously both the Mormons and the Scientologists keep their doctrine secret, and I think in part the reason that their doctrines are secret is that the more you learn about them, the more bizarre they are. The Scientologists, of course, don't want to talk about Xenu, the intergalactic emperor who flourished around 75 million BC, and the extent to which they, the Mormons talk about the planet Kolob, which is a star or a planet the closest to the throne of God, although astronomers haven't been able to find it yet. This comes from the Book of Abraham, and it's translated from the Egyptian, allegedly by Joseph Smith. There's William Manchester, the historian, says that Joseph Smith stole a manuscript by Solomon Spaulding from a 19th century rooming house in Atlanta, which later then became the Book of Mormon, which just made the change. Instead of the ancient Romans coming to the New World, the ancient Hebrews came. I mean, this should all be public. If we're going to have a president of the United States who belongs to a religion that keeps its doctrine secret, these kind of secrets should not be kept from the American people.
Well, you really raise the core question here, and that is, and this is a question that the press is terrified to ask, and it goes like this. Just how bizarre does a presidential candidate's belief structure, core belief structure, that they claim they hold dearly to themselves more than anything else, how bizarre does that have to be before that person becomes disqualified to run for president or occupy the Oval Office? I mean, do we have to have a candidate who sacrifices a goat every Saturday afternoon in his backyard and wants to do the same thing in the Rose Garden if he becomes president? Is that a bridge too far? If that's his religion or her religion, are we allowed to say, excuse me? I mean, where's the line? So all I'm saying to people who say to me, Steve, you know, don't start a religious war, don't start secular, you know, all this kind of stuff we see in the Middle East with the Sunnis and the Shiites against one another, you know, you don't even bring it up. All I'm saying to them is, look, just go on the Internet, read the Book of Mormon as it's published by the Mormon Church. Just read it. That's all I ask. And then ask yourself, my word, this man believes that stuff? Do I really want him anywhere near the nuclear button? It just seems to me, takes my breath away that this is an issue that's off the table. It's probably, there was a, Butts, was his name Butts? I forget.
Earl Butts, he was a Secretary of Agriculture under Reagan, yeah.
Under Reagan, who believed, who was a real evangelical at the time, which was, you know, we didn't know too much about him back then, but he believed that the end days were near, and therefore all this talk about preserving our resources and worrying about air quality and water quality was nonsense. Mm-hmm. That we needed to, that all the resources were put on Earth for man to use up, and that since the day was coming very nearly, we better hurry up using it all up. I mean, so religious beliefs do matter in public office.
Well, I'm curious to know why Mitt Romney has not in effect hidden behind the First Amendment, because Jack Kennedy, when he was running for president, made a very, very strong speech about the value of the First Amendment and how that would govern his presidency as a way to to deal with anti-Catholic bigotry at the time.
Well, the reason, Ian, that he doesn't want to get into the short grass of the First Amendment is because, like with the Second Amendment, yes, we all have a right to own firearms. But no, we do not have the right to go out and willy-nilly fire them anywhere we want, at whatever we want. So, see, there's, again, that contract. If you're going to do this, you have to do it with there are implied restrictions. And if you get into the First Amendment, same thing as we discussed earlier. So he doesn't want to get into all of that because then it does begin to raise the questions of, does the First Amendment protect us, protect religion or protect us from religion? Both.
Well, instead of you know, taking his cue from JFK, Romney, I guess in part to court the religious fundamentalists, he's taken the stand that there's too much secularism in this country and that secularism is imposing upon religion, which is really basically the topic of our conversation.
Secularism is simply the natural state that the founding fathers visualized for this country. They had come from a continent rife with religious slash political intrigue, where the Catholic Church and the Protestant establishment had created a sort of quasi government of sorts, and all the struggles that ensued, and all the struggles over finances, and who rules, and who can divorce, and who can't divorce if they're king, and they ran away from all of that, and they came over here, and they said, you know, no more of that. That's one of the key reasons we're over here. No more of that, and so, you know, there you are. The secularism is what America was supposed to be. Now, these people want to turn it into something more akin to what we see in Iran or Iraq, and there you see what happens when you start saying, well, you know, there are some core moral values enshrined in our traditional religious beliefs that need to now be enshrined in law, and then the trouble starts.
Well, do you think that at any point in this campaign of where they're spending billions and billions telling us in Romney's case that he America needs a manager and he's the perfect management guy to manage our problems. And hopefully Obama will make the argument that America needs a leader. But either way, they're going to spend billions. Do you think somebody's going to be able to ask Romney at some point about his religious beliefs and whether Jesus and Satan are brothers and whether it's okay to baptize Anne Frank and all of this strange stuff that they have in their religion, not to mention the hidden history of the Mountain Meadow Massacre, the wars against the United States. I mean, literally the United States went to war against the Mormon religion. There's a fascinating history here that seems to be buried.
If anybody in the press is brave enough or foolish enough to ask the question of Romney, they'll get his well-crafted and the LDS Church has years ago figured out how to sidestep these kind of issues. But he'll give us one of those glib answers about, well, you know, we all have our religious beliefs and. But I want to be everybody's president. The fact of the matter is, I want to know how an individual views reality before I let them in the most real job in the universe. I want to know that. I want to know how he views the difference between fiction, fantasy, and reality. It's extremely important for me to know that, and it should be the key question, the core question on every voter's mind before we start discussing such mundane issues as the economy. It is mundane compared to the kinds of phantasmagorical things that man believes.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Stephen Pisa.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Ian.
Bye-bye. Again, I've been speaking with Stephen Pisa, who's an investigative journalist and author of the New York Times bestseller Inside Job, The Looting of America's Savings and Loans, which was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. He has an article at The Smirking Chimp, Cultist, Crazy, or Both. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Answer it.